Hello, this is David Hicks. I am coming to you from sunny Palmetto, Florida. Probably, if you're in bad weather, you didn't want to know that. So, don't worry about that. It's rainy. Oh, wow, look at that snowstorm that just blew up. Okay, never mind. That just doesn't work. Anyway, I wanted to continue this series on God and homosexuality. The first part of the series was simply an apology because, unfortunately, from those, if you've been in full blown homosexuality or if you've just been heading that way, you might have heard things being said, seen things being done, or had some things done to you or said to you that hurt you, hurt someone you love, and by people who are saying we're following Jesus here. And unfortunately, there were times in my life where I might have been that person. And as always, I sincerely apologize. And I pray, I beg, and plead, do not close your mind on God, because people did evil things in his name, things he never approved of, things he never advocated, things he never wanted to happen. And so we talked about what the issue is not. God has absolutely no problem with having deep, strong, emotional love and care for someone of the same gender. No problem with that. No issue with that. The problem is when we sexualize that relationship. It's no different than incestual relationships. Do we want a father and a daughter to have the strongest of bonds of love between them? Absolutely. But does that mean then that it's okay for a 43-year-old father to start a sexual relationship with a 25-year-old daughter? Absolutely not. It's a relationship that God never wanted sexualized. That being the relationship, the love, the bond, the friendship between people of the same gender. And we looked at the Old Testament. We saw that how strongly God was against it in the Old Testament law, and we saw that God was against it in the New Testament. Remember, the Old Testament are writings that took place before Jesus, New Testament writings that took place after. And it was even, there was even capital punishment for that offense, but that was not the only thing in the Old Testament for which there was capital punishment. Adultery was one that we looked at. And by looking at Jesus and how he treated a woman caught in adultery, we saw the purpose of this capital punishment in the Old Testament law. The purpose was not to kill as many people as possible. The purpose was not to execute everyone who actually committed the offense. The purpose was to teach the Israelites and all who would read the law of Moses and hear about it and study it, to teach that these actions bring death. They kill our relationship with God. They sever our relationship with God. They kill us spiritually. And yes, they can kill us physically as well. But you see that when you look at how Jesus treated the woman who was caught in adultery. And they said, you know, hey, the law of Moses says we need to kill her, put her to death, execute her. And Jesus said, he who is without sin cast the first stone. They all ended up leaving. And Jesus' final words to her were, go your way and sin no more. So God's desire is for us is to have mercy and compassion on us when we make these mistakes. And for us to learn to go and sin no more. But the final question, and the question I left you with, was this. If God is so strongly against homosexuality, then so many people ask, why did he make me this way? Because many people testify that they have always been attracted to people of the same gender, not people of the opposite gender. Now, others can tell you their story, and they can know, they know when they started changing, how they started changing from being attracted to people of opposite gender to the same gender. I know one fellow who was sexually abused by a male cousin. And then after that incident, that's when he started having issues with, struggles with, he started thinking homosexual thoughts because he was abused by a male cousin. But, all right, so let's look at this for a second. Does God make people homosexual from the womb? Well, here's what I can tell you. That God plays a part in the formation of mankind. For example, in Exodus chapter 4, this is Moses. To give you the background, we've talked about it before. There's a man of great faith named Abraham. God blessed him. He had a son named Isaac. Isaac had twins, Esau and Jacob. Of those two, God blessed Jacob like he did Abraham and Isaac. He changed Jacob's name to Israel, and afterwards his descendants were called Hebrews, Israelites, Jews. And this was a period of time where the Israelites, the descendants of Jacob, were all in Egypt. And so the Egyptians decided that there were so many of them that they decided to make forced labor out of them. They enslaved the Israelites. They wanted to oppress the Israelites because they did not trust the Israelites. They felt like if we just let these people go, maybe our enemies will come and they'll fight with our enemies and destroy us or kill us. They're going to become too strong for us. And so in order to try and keep that from happening, they enslaved the Israelites. So during that time, Moses is born. It was during a time in which the instructions were kill every baby boy. But his parents hid Moses. And he was, by God's providence, adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, raised in royalty, raised among the royal family. But when he was older, he did something to try and, well, he did something he felt called to do. He saw an Egyptian beating up a Hebrew slave, and he ended up, what he thought he ended up doing was killing that Egyptian in secret. But the secret became known. He was not successful, and as soon as he found out that other people knew he'd killed that Egyptian, he knew Pharaoh would want to kill him. He fled from Egypt and ended up staying out in a wilderness for 40 years. 40 years. 40. And then one day, as he's taking care of some sheep, he sees a bush that's on fire, but it's not being consumed. I've got a joke for that, but I'm saving it for Jungle Jim. If you just check out my comedy section. Okay, anyway, he sees this bush that's on fire, and it's not burnt, but it's not burned up. And he goes over, and it's God who speaks to him from the midst of this burning bush. And God tells Moses, I want you to go back to Egypt because I'm going to use you to free my people. Tell Pharaoh, let my people go. And so Moses has a hard time accepting this assignment. And we pick up in Exodus chapter 4. Remember, the Bible consists of small books. Those books are divided into chapters. Those chapters, we subdivided them into sections. They were never originally written in chapter or verse form. It's just stuff we added later to help us find things. And so we pick up Exodus chapter 4, verse 10. Now, understand as I read this, Moses has been slowly and hesitantly, and he's been giving God a hard time about this assignment. So in verse 10, then Moses said to the Lord, "Oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." So the Lord said to him, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord?" Now God, that's one thing I like about God. If he's responsible for something, he doesn't hide it. And so here he says, now understand, there are people who've been made blind and lame and deaf because evil was done to them. That's not what God is talking about here. But he's talking about how in non-evil ways, he himself sometimes makes people mute. He makes people who are blind. He makes people who are deaf, lame, etc. He does that. Now, why he does that, you know, I can offer theories. But I really don't want to get off on that tangent very much, except for this. I will say this much, that God desires to show, to demonstrate his mercy and compassion to those he has made this way, if they're willing to accept it. Well, he desires to do it whether people are willing to accept it or not. You see, we can't really learn mercy and compassion until we're in a situation where we need mercy, or someone else around us needs mercy, where we're in a situation where we need compassion, or someone around us needs compassion. I mean, sure, we could read about it and need to have head knowledge, book knowledge. But until life situations present themselves where that call for mercy and compassion, it can't really become a heart knowledge. If you understand what I mean. But yes, God claims responsibility for this. Now, we read in Psalms. Psalm is a Hebrew word for song. And the book of Psalms, which is, you know, for those who are still using paperback editions of the Bible, such as I am right now, is basically the middle of the Bible. In pretty much any Bible, it'll be in the middle. And Psalm 139 is written by David, who was a king of Israel. And in it, down in verse 13, he's talking to God. And he says, "For you have formed my inward parts. You have covered me," or "woven me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well." So David praises God and marvels at at what God does, because he gives God the credit for doing what? For having formed his inward parts, for having pieced him together, put him together, fashioned him together in his mother's womb. So, who is the one ultimately who creates us and forms us and makes us? It is God. Now, can some things happen to a child in the womb that are not from God? Absolutely. A woman perhaps abuses alcohol or drugs while being pregnant, and that damages the body of the child within her. That's not from God. The damaged part, the things that came from the alcohol and the drugs, whatever that did to the body, however that affected the body, that is not from God. But as for the rest, God is the one to whom the praise belongs and the credit belongs for however the child is made. So, is it possible then that there is something about the way God makes a person that causes them to desire certain things more than others desire them? Another let's get out of the abstract. Let's talk some concrete examples. We're talking about homosexuality. Is it possible that God fashions a person together in the womb and they do come out from the womb and in such a way that as they grow older, with that, if there weren't any external influences whatsoever, they desire people the same gender? And not some of the opposite gender. My best guess is yes. I would imagine it's possible. I don't have words to prove it. But my guess is yes. What about people who desire alcohol? Of course, if desire alcohol is probably a bad phrase to use. But is there something about someone's genetic makeup, the way God created them, that once they begin drinking, they have a much stronger desire to continue drinking than other people? I think life bears that out. I think if we tested enough people, we could prove that to be true. I can't say it definitively. I can't point you to the verse. But ultimately, God plays a role in fashioning us in the womb. Now, here's the problem, though, with the question of why did God make me this way? Here's two problems. One is, God isn't the only one who molds us and shapes us and makes us. You see, there's another being at work in this world, and his name is Satan, the devil. When Jesus was in the wilderness, 40 days, who showed up? The devil. Why was he there? He was trying to get Jesus to sin. In the Old Testament, there's the story of Job. The angels came before God, and Satan also came. He's a spiritual being. And it's the Bible hints that, it doesn't come out and say this verbatim, but it hints that at one point, Satan was, if not the top angel, one of the highest ranking angels, the chief of angels, or one of the chiefs, something like that. But it wasn't enough for him. He wanted to be God. And so apparently, again, the Bible didn't say it verbatim, but it hints in different places that Satan led a rebellion against God, but was ultimately he and the angels who followed him were ultimately defeated. And so Satan is described as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Satan himself said in the book of Job that he'd been wandering around the earth. With what intention? He didn't say in the book of Job, but we understand from all his other actions, he's seeking to destroy people spiritually, to lead people away from God spiritually. I mean, the whole dialogue he had with Job was basically, how could we get Job to curse God? That was Satan's goal. He wanted something to happen to Job to where Job would curse God to his face. So that's the kind of person Satan is. Now, his influences are all over this world. And how do you know? If we're going to give credit to God, or blame, assign blame to God for being attracted to the same gender, or being an alcoholic, or having some sort of struggle that we are having, name the struggle. I mean, look, I didn't go down the road of homosexuality. Could have. At some point, I'm sure that's, that story will come up. But I've struggled with self-control in the area of sexuality. Do I blame God? No. Is there something about the way God made me that could have given me naturally stronger sexual desires than perhaps other people? I'd be shocked if that wasn't true. But the problem is, I made a couple things. I made decisions that strengthened my sexual desires, that led me away from self-control. I gave in to certain temptations. And when we do that, when we feed the darkness within us, we reap darkness. I want to read to you from Galatians. It's a New Testament letter. It was written by Paul, who was formerly known as Saul, a persecutor of Christians. Helped Christians be killed. Jesus appeared to him, changed his life forever. He believed, he repented, he was baptized, and started preaching Jesus like his very life depended on it on a daily basis. And so in the book of Galatians, chapter 6, beginning at verse 6, we read this. Let him who has taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. And he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. You see, you reap what you sow. If what you sow feeds your fleshly desires, you're going to reap an out-of-control life. You desire alcohol, you keep feeding, you keep drinking, and you keep drinking and drinking. What happens? That's how you become an alcoholic. When you keep feeding that desire. We look at porn, and then we have trouble with sexual self-control? Are we going to blame God for that? That was our decision. God never said to do that. In fact, Jesus said, if you look on a woman to lust for her, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. What does he mean? He's saying if we're looking at other people so that we can commit sin with them in our minds, play out sinful fantasies, we're already sinning in our hearts, in our minds. So Jesus is saying, this is wrong, this is sin. And yet we commit the sin, we lose our self-control in all sorts of arenas of life. And then this is where Satan does his best work. Because we commit these sins, and then what does Satan do? He gets us to blame God. It's God's fault. If God hadn't made you that way, this never would have happened. And he just plays pure innocent. And we never give him credit. We never blame him. We never say, why did Satan do this to me? Well, I can tell you, because he hates you. He hates us all. But we don't even ask the question, because we're blaming God when we make bad decisions. Let me ask this. How do you know, in those ages where we barely remember anything, age 1, age 2, age 3, even age 4, how do you know that there wasn't something that happened to you during that period of time that didn't influence you to have attraction to the same gender? I saw a movie called Happy Feet 2, cartoonish movie, you know, computer animation. And because I don't trust Hollywood and I'm an adult now, I could sit back and not just be absorbed in the movie and just sit there with mind numb, just soaking everything in. I could sit and look in it with this question in mind. What's Satan up to here? Because pretty much in every movie, Satan's up to something. Now, sometimes God also speaks through movies and things like that, and there's wonderful, valuable points. But more often than not, Satan is trying to teach something. Satan's trying to get something, get away with something in movies and TV. And in that movie, it basically modeled a male-male homosexual relationship between two krill. And you may not realize it at first, and it's very subtle. Of course, it had to be subtle, because if it was overt, parents wouldn't have brought their children to see the movie. But they get to this point where the two male krill hug, and they hold this hug for an excessively long period of time, an awkwardly long period of time. But that's because the imagery, you know, they wanted to try and get that imagery, model that relationship into the minds of those children. So how do you know that you didn't see something, hear something, observe something in your youngest ages that instilled that desire within you? I remember as a kid, I loved cartoons. And I watched a lot of Bugs Bunny cartoons. These were cartoons made, I don't know, 50s, 60s, that they were still being replayed back in the 70s and the mornings of the 80s. And I mean, they, you know, stood the test of time for several decades. And most of them, you know, pretty well, just depends on how you view violence and stuff like that. Most of them I didn't think much about as far as influence that they were having. But I remember one cartoon in particular where Elmer Fudd, the hunter who hunts Bugs Bunny, gets stripped down to his boxers, and he's real embarrassed about it. And I felt this something within me in seeing that. And then later in the cartoon, he gets stripped down to where he's got nothing on but a fig leaf in front of his private part. And I felt it even stronger. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was some sort of awakening, some sort of hormonal thing of the sexual aspect of my body. I don't know. But I know I felt something in seeing that. And I wonder to this day, how did seeing something like that contribute to my struggle to have sexual self-control? You see, we're so quick to blame God, and yet there are things that are of Satan and from Satan that could have happened to us before we ever realized it, before we had any knowledge of it or memory of it, or were able to have memory of it. And then you add on to it the intentional things we do, the decisions we make that take away our self-control. Is it really God's fault? Is God really the one to blame for our lack of self-control? I've run out of time. I had to get back to work. So let's bring things full circle. What have we said here? That God plays a role in how we're made. Definitely. And could something about the way God makes us, for some people, mean that when they grow up, they're naturally attracted to people of the same gender? Could be. Definitely could be. But that's not the only influence. And there are things evil done by people, perhaps to us, to other children in ages of innocence, that are from Satan, that can, whatever the sin might be, that can lead people down that road of sin. And there are choices that we make that go against everything God is trying to teach us and everything God is trying to tell us and show us, tell us to be and show us how to be. Decisions we make in defiance of Him that also contribute to our lack of self-control. To perhaps homosexuality, adultery, other fornication between a man and a woman. It's all forms of being out of control. Gluttony, alcoholism, drug addiction, all forms of being out of control. And we reap that out-of-control lifestyle when we sow those seeds by the decisions that we make. And so ultimately, you may have been blaming God this whole time. And in part two of this, we'll go back to this very original idea. Go back to it. God, let's assume, God made me this way. And yes, there have been influences that have contributed to strengthening that desire, but ultimately the original desire of attraction to the same gender, let's assume that it was something about the way God made you, that you had that originally, initially. And let's deal with that. Let's take that and let's run with that assumption and see where we go. But don't just say God is to blame, whatever the circumstances. Step back, take a look at your life. Because there's probably a whole lot more credit that needs to go to Satan and ourselves than ever needs to be put on God. May God bless this recording.